This is the Aftermarket Radio Network.
Hey, welcome everyone. It's Vision 2024, back in the studio here with a friend from years ago, Jeremy. And I'm trying to remember, you said you've been in Freedom Automotive for 8 years now. And I think I started to go back in the legacy episode and started to look at all the ones that we did together back in the day. I don't know why you haven't been on in a few years. I just don't know, but you're here. I'm thrilled. And oh, let me introduce this guy, Jeremy O'Neill from Advisor Fix, Service Advisor Trainer. And I think you were doing that even before you bought Freedom Automotive, right?
Yes, that was the main gig 8 years before that. And with the travel and a young family growing up, I wanted to be home. So I did the smart thing. I bought an auto repair shop.
It was very smart. Let me stop for a moment and say, welcome. Thank you so much to Napa Auto Care for sponsoring us to have us here at Vision. If you're not a Napa Auto Care, you really need to talk to your Napa Automotive Service salesperson. And you know, our goal is always to leave you a little bit better and a little bit smarter with every episode you're with us.
Since its relaunch in 2020, the Napa Auto Care member site has continued to evolve to keep members updated on all the Napa programs, promotions, benefits, and other information available to help their businesses thrive. If you're a Napa Auto Care member, visit member.napaautocare.com to access the member portal. Not a Napa Auto Care Center? Well, contact your servicing Napa Auto Parts store to learn more about how to join the Napa family.
So, Jeremy, I'm talking to an individual the other day and says, I'm doing a panel at Vision on Saturday morning, and I've got two shop owners, two service advisors, two technicians, and Jeremy, you're one of the shop owners, but yet a service advisor, trainer, and it's all about communications in the shop between front of shop, back of shop. So I'm telling this to somebody, and he goes, oh my God, let me tell you the story that I know about Jeremy O'Neill.
Oh, I can't wait to hear this one.
Jeremy O'Neill's out doing training. And he said, you're in front of a room telling this story. And you say, you know what? I better put my money where my mouth is and go buy a shop. And that's what this person remembers of your legacy as to why you got a shop. Now, of course, you want to stay home. I get that. But the credibility that it lends to all that you're doing is because you're a shop owner.
I'm sure there's credibility with it. The reason we haven't been on is I have been buried in the shop. When you say you have two shop owners, two advisors, two technicians, I'm like, yeah, I'm one of all of those, right?
Right. Yeah, so yeah.
It's interesting, the transformation. I've become a really good diagnostic technician over the last 8 years.
Stop it.
No, I've got a really big toolbox, and my wife doesn't know about that side of the business, but it's been just an incredible journey. And it's interesting to see how when you go after one goal, if you don't take care of the other goals too, things can kind of take a back seat. The training side of it has, so it has suffered as far as the strength of Advisor Fix and the company growth, but it's very interesting. I've built a really good brand with a shop in my hometown. And that was something I've always wanted, was that community connection in my life and I grew up in this area. So I've been up there, gosh, over 32 years now.
Hesperia, California.
Yeah, it's the high desert. So the tri-community that we live in is Wrightwood, Phelan, Pinyon Hills. I grew up in Pinyon Hills, California. My parents moved me out there in 1982. We bought a mobile home, 2.5 acres. My stepdad paid cash for it. And we had no phone or electricity for 4 years.
What?
Yeah. No telephone, no electricity.
What a story.
Yeah, we did our homework with a kerosene lamp. It was like the old Western days. It was awesome. I loved it. Three boys, my stepbrother, my real brother, and we could shoot target practice right off the porch, have bonfires, ride our motorcycles all around. Just a great way for three really young, unruly boys to grow up. And so that's the backbone of that community, which is kind of this old Western, live free or die. I'll take that motto from my friends up. And what is it, New Hampshire that has that motto?
Yeah.
And after looking at where to raise our kids, the school system was really good. So we decided to settle back down there. My wife grew up in the same area, and that's home for us.
What's unruly all about you?
Huh? Oh, there's stories. Just head down to the bar tonight. You'll find out.
Oh, I can't wait. Good, good, good. What time will you be there, Joe? Well, wait a minute. We have to get up early tomorrow.
It's okay. We'll just stay up.
And that's the theme here always in Vision. People hear these crazy stories who've never been here. Imagine there's 1,200 new people here.
Yeah, I got in late yesterday, and just the atmosphere when you get to Vision. If you've never been to Vision, you've got to put it on your bucket list and get here. For me, it's a life-changing event every year. The ideas that I come up with, this spark, that one thought, and then it kicks it into action.
Guilty, Your Honor.
Yeah. And you can look back every year at Vision. There's something memorable in your life that came out of that event.
Yeah.
And there's so much young talent here this year too. It is just amazing to see the change in the industry that this place is.
Last night, I can't remember where we were. We were talking about the number of youth, and I really threw a statistic out that it was almost like 3 to 1 for every one, I don't want to say old, but established person, say 40 and up, there were 3 20s and 30s.
Oh, yeah.
Have you seen that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Amazing.
My son tells me, Dad, you're in the old guys group now. And I can still say, that's okay. I'm still faster on a dirt bike than you. So until the day he passes me, which isn't going to be very far.
The dirt bike thing. I have to tell you, I've heard this story. I've probably seen some videos long ago about you and your son going out and just having a blast.
Oh, yeah. And that's why we live where we live. We can ride right from our house. I can ride literally hundreds of miles. It's still open terrain. And that's why we do what we do. And that's one of the reasons I bought a shop was I didn't want to travel 200 days a year. I want to be able to get up on a Saturday morning, light the bikes up and just head out for half hour to an hour and just connect with my kids and be there. By the way, we got horses too. So if you're deciding between a horse and a dirt bikes are a lot better because when you don't ride them, you don't have to feed them and they don't make a mess.
All right. So Tracy is in the studio with us. Everybody knows my daughter, Tracy, and she's, of course, manning the controls. And she says, Dad, go here, do this. Go. But when she, I think 13, Tracy, some very young age, she started to muck stalls at the local.
Oh, how cool.
Yeah. And she still rides.
Nice.
And she has friends from the barn that she worked at for years all over the damn world.
Oh, yeah.
And she knows people that are in equestrian stuff, Olympian things. So
very cool.
So you mentioned horses. Did you see her eyes light up?
Yeah, woo! Absolutely.
Cool. All right. Great.
Yeah. By the way, I've fallen off of every horse I've ever been on. So it's funny how I can ride a dirt bike and a mountain bike 80 miles an hour and not fall off, but the horse has a mind of its own, so sometimes I don't connect with it.
So we dropped her off at a barn once, and then all of a sudden the horse fell on her, and we had to follow the ambulance
to
Children's Hospital because they wasn't sure if it was just the arm or other stuff.
Oh, war stories.
Your parents, you need to get out of the ER and
yes.
Tough stuff.
Absolutely.
You started your business 8 years ago. I'd love an update on its life cycle and where you're at. Are people now to a point where they're dropping keys and say, hey, just fix it? And also, because I see that service advisor training is one of the most important areas of training that we need to work on in the business, I got to ask you a bunch of questions about that. So as the audience is here hearing this great behind the stuff, seeing stories about Jeremy, we really want to get into some really heavy business and find out how you see service advisor training blossoming in our industry and critical need and why it's so important and how many hours we should take every year.
Well, absolutely.
Just go, man.
So you just keep in mind, I didn't just buy a auto repair shop. I bought the worst shop in the United States.
Oh my God. Yes.
I remember we did Vision. It was 2016. We did Vision South of the Border, and this is October, and I had the deal negotiated, and I didn't tell my wife. Now, I've been married for this is year 25 of my wonderful marriage.
Congrats.
And there's one thing in marriage that I've learned. You have two choices. You can ask for permission or forgiveness. And yeah. I've gotten really good at asking for forgiveness throughout the years. And it's painful at times, but it works. I remember we're Vision South of the Border, and a couple of my shop owner buddies, they had heard about the deal transpiring and going through. And then one of them walks up to my wife and says, oh, so I heard Jeremy bought a shop. And that was the night I started to ask for forgiveness. Whoa. And one of those things. But the background on the shop that I looked at, it's 20 minutes from my house, and it was just a mess. It was dirty. It was filthy. But there wasn't a lot of negative side of it as far as the customer base. There was no online presence. And so go back in time, 2016, 2017, DVIs were kind of newer. Mm-hmm. Digital communication was just kind of on the forefront of the auto repair industry. And in 2016, that shop closed out $143,000 in sales for the year.
Hello.
Yeah, that's not a lot.
Okay, well, that makes it affordable.
Oh, yeah.
But it also poses you the Mount Everest of your challenges.
Correct. Which is fine.
You trust me. I know that. Yeah.
So proof of concept. I want to go back and say, hey, you took this dead shop and I wanted to turn it into $1 million shop within 1 year. So from 143,000 to
80,000 a month.
Yeah. We did that in November of that year. 11 months later, we did that. Fast forward, we've done 10x growth. In 7 years. So last year we closed at just over 1.45 with 2.5 technicians and really small footprint. We went through a moved the shop about 2 years ago, and we're looking to build our own facility now, just in negotiations for the property right now.
So nowhere but up.
It's just been a steady climb up. Absolutely.
Good. Not too fast, but strong enough that you can manage it, right?
I'm had this thought that there's $1 million out there for any shop that wants to add it. And you could do it in these modules, right? Like go find two techs, find an advisor, and add $1 million to your shop literally overnight.
Yeah.
It's there. It just, then you look at the net profitability of certain things. Do you have the space? And then don't forget, there's a lot of risk in auto repair. The second reason customers are upset with auto repair shops is the car wasn't fixed right the first time. Mm-hmm. And that's something, you could be the best salesperson, the best service advisor, but if you don't have the techs in the back, you are in trouble.
So I'm in a seminar with Craig O'Neill and Chris Cloutier. We just wanted to go see great friends of ours. Absolutely. Hanging out. 200 people. It's a huge room. It's packed. And we got in there just as Craig was talking about a J.D. Power survey. Customer service is down in the last 4 years in automotive repair, aftermarket. Because now they're measuring aftermarket. Image, trust issues, negative. I mean, come on. When are we going to smarten up? Everyone who would leave Vision from a business management perspective and or even techs realize we've got to do better when we get out there.
Correct.
And so this lift is one person at a time, it mm-hmm. seems.
Well, it is. And this is when you talk about service advisor training and people ask me, what are the traits that a good service advisor needs? The number one thing is they have got to care about their job. And the one thing they have to do is they have to make the car and the customer better. And we have lost that so much. Yesterday, I was checking in at LAX and I go through the clear line. And I kid you not, you talk about customer service. The girl who's helping me, supposed to check me in, doesn't ever make eye contact, continues a conversation with the person that her coworker. And she doesn't even say, sir, I can help you. She just waves her fingers like, come here, like I'm a puppy. And I was just like, oh, this is just, it's everywhere. Now, unfortunately, when you look at how fast society explodes and scalability and IPOs and just growth, when we get in that growth mindset, we lose the core of some of the human being touches that we crave eye contact, conversations, just these simple things that common courtesies are completely gone. Yeah, it's interesting to see that.
Dale Carnegie says, just when you have an interaction, leave someone better. Mm-hmm. And I don't think we do that at all. As of late, probably the last 6 months, and if you're a loyal listener, first of all, thank you so, so much. You're going to hear Carm do his CXO rant again. And that is that I believe that every company should have a CXO, the client experience officer. And if you go to your team and say, I'm about ready to hire a CXO, and you pause and you're silent for maybe 12 seconds and let them all think, what could that mean? And I can't believe we're ready to hire somebody. We need a tech. We need a service advisor. What's this? It's the client experience officer. And I can't really hire one. So we all have to take on that role.
I love that flip right there.
Yeah. Isn't that great?
It is.
And to your absolute point, I love that. If we don't leave the customer with this greatest experience ever of any repair shop they've ever attended, then you're still going to be climbing a tough ladder and you're never going to create stickiness, never going to create loyalty. And I just love what you said. Let's go back to something Jeremy gave us a truly ripe apple off the tree when he said the 2-for-1 rule. Two techs, one service advisor, $1 million. But you got to have the infrastructure. Everything else has got to be in play. Build it and then expand, grow, build your capacity.
Oh, absolutely.
Wow.
Absolutely. Hey, the good news about customer service is the bar is so low, we don't have to be excellent these days. Jesus. The world is making our job a lot easier, right?
That's bad news.
It is what it is.
You mean customer service anywhere?
General, in the world. It's just human courtesy. Just in the way, I'm not even getting my parental rant of how children are being raised these days.
Oh, or thank not God to hear raised. That from you.
Oh my gosh.
How old are your kids now?
19, 16, and 14.
You're good. Maybe the 14 still needs some guidance.
Oh, she's awesome. Yeah, she teaches me stuff every day.
I love it.
It's my baby girl. Yep. But I'm on the plane flying out here, and it's interesting. Sometimes I'll choose to sit in the back of the plane just to observe a different world than I'm normally like. It's out of my comfort zone. So I go to my seat, and there's a young family in front of me. And the way that the two children, their behavioral patterns, they control the parents and the screen is what shuts them up. And I'm just observing this. And I was like, if I raised my kids that way, I wish somebody would have taken them away, but I didn't. And I don't want any children to get taken away from their parents, but that's just what's up with parents these days.
Why do 3-year-olds have tablets?
It hurts the brain.
It's the sitter. It hurts the brain.
It does. It hurts brain development.
It hurts mine now.
Especially when they don't have earphones.
Oh, Jeremy, that's too cool. I just want to drive a little bit into what kind of time, if you were advising me as the owner, listen, Carm, you've got to have 20 hours for your service advisor training every year. Or let's invest in 3 hours a month in call screening and one-on-ones, or let's get some technology training to help them with their interaction with the technicians and not over explain to the customer, but know enough about giving them the confidence in what we're doing. Let's go down that path.
Is it okay if I bare my soul to everybody?
Yeah, that's what this podcast is all about, bearing souls.
Okay, so in 8 years, I've been through 68 service advisors.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
Now, this isn't a self-deprecating.
Wait a minute. I want to be your priest.
No.
My son, what are you doing wrong?
Bless me, Father, for I have sinned. Yes. Hey, no. It's not anything I'm doing wrong. It's something they're doing wrong.
Yes. It has nothing to do with the higher.
No, but I'm going to make a point here. My industry friends, I've heard this over and over and over and over again, and they say you have to lower your standards. And I will not. I'm committed to a high level of service. I've got it laid out. The unfortunate thing is if you come to work with me, I'm with you 12 hours a day. That's just how long the job takes. If you're not going to do the job and I teach you something and you are untrainable, I don't let time go by. I say next. I'm not afraid to be alone at my shop. There's 6 days now. I've been the only person in my shop, including technicians. There's nobody there. It's just me. Because if you're not going to live up to my 5-star standard that we have committed to our customer base, you are not going to be a part of this team. So how does that tie into training?
And Wait a minute. You don't have a life at 1.4 if you're the only person in the shop.
Yeah, I do. I'm close to home.
Okay.
I'm not traveling.
That's an excuse, but go ahead.
Well, it's only 6 days, Carm, out of 8 years. It's not that much time.
Oh.
Not like...
Oh.
I'm not alone all the time at the shop.
Okay.
In the 8-year history I've had in my shop, there were six days where I fired everybody.
I wasn't listening really. You fired. I would love to hear the story of you going in and saying, you out, you out. Did they know it's coming?
Yeah, you could probably read the emotions through my energy. And yeah, they know. Typically, it's a 3 to 4 week process. And I mean, there's some really basic stuff in 2 weeks. If you don't get, you're just never going to get.
It's Carm here, talking to you about what the NAPA Auto Care Center program can do for your business. You probably already know the NAPA brand is the most recognized and trusted name in the automotive aftermarket industry. In fact, studies show that nearly 95% of consumers recognize NAPA and associate it with quality parts, service, and technical expertise. So why not complete a Pro Image upgrade and take advantage of that? Pro Image is a co-branding program for the exterior and interior of your shop. On the outside, it includes the NAPA colors and distinctive NAPA signage. While the public may know you as a reliable, locally owned business, a Pro Image upgrade helps set your shop apart from the competition even further. It's also a visual signal to customers and potential customers that you and NAPA are partners. Most importantly, Pro Image really works. This co-branding opportunity has helped NAPA Auto Care Centers across the country increase their car counts and sales. In fact, those that have completed a Pro Image project enjoy an average 23% sales increase during the first year. Pro Image upgrades are also available for the interior of your shop. A Pro Image interior upgrade transforms your customer waiting area from merely utilitarian to warm and welcoming. The goal is to maintain your shop's independent identity while enhancing the customer's experience. You can get a free look at what a Pro Image exterior or interior upgrade could look like by visiting the NAPA Auto Care members site and clicking on the Pro Image link under the NAPA Pro Image tab. Or contact your local NAPA auto parts store. Your servicing NAPA store can tell you more about Pro Image, plus the hundreds of other reasons to become part of the NAPA Auto Care family, the largest network of independent automotive repair shops in the country.
Did you ever hang into with somebody you really believed that they had everything it took and you kept working and working and working? I mean, I've been in those positions before. I waited too long and then the individual finally, after like 5 months, something happened. Everything clicked. Me, I would have typically never waited that long when I saw the person not being able to get it.
So what's interesting, in the last service advisor 65, I made this statement. I'm committed to you. You're my guy. We're going to get through this come hell or high water. And I pushed harder and longer than I ever thought I would with that person. However, the core competencies were not there. And I kept going home with this feeling of negativity and anger, just because when you don't live up to the standards and deliver the service that's expected, you're violating everything that I built my life around. And it's not just the money. It's about the experience for the customer. For instance, we have a final quality control check for every car that goes out. Car's backed in, it's staged. One of the things I teach them is you've got to look under the vehicle and see if there's any drips on the ground. And 5 days in a row, there's cars out front that have leaks. And I'm like, whether it was just washer fluid or just water, whatever, I just want to make sure it's not an oil leak or something's mm-hmm. going to come back. If you can't do that, tells me you don't care about the quality of the product you deliver.
Yeah.
And if you're okay with that, this is not going to work. So it's just having this. So yes, I did commit. And I said, come heck or high water, we're going to make it happen. But it's your behaviors that show me what you're going to do. And when I could see your behaviors for 8 hours, 10 hours, 12 hours a day, I'm not going to just say, I need to work on my business, not in it. I'm going to go to a 20 group. I'm going to go get better ideas on how to do this. No, I see your behaviors, because if I'm not there, that's the experience that's going to be delivered to the customers. The funniest thing, I've never once had a customer come back to me after somebody left and said, I wish you had kept that person. Every single time they said, I was wondering when you're going to let them go.
Number 62. He remembers number 62.
Isn't it bad I don't remember names? I mean, I can tell you.
No, but it's amazing that you could go back and give me a reason why 62 was let go. This is a positive thing. It's in your fiber to know what worked and what didn't. And you're continuing when you find a person, oh my God, this person's acting like number 50.
Here, you should write a book, The 101 Personality Traits of a Service Advisor.
Yeah. Wait a minute, 62 ways to get fired. Yeah, by Jeremy.
Exactly. We're not done yet. So we can't title
it. That's the subtitle. Yeah, I love that. I love that. Yeah. How many hours does a service advisor need in literally relationship customer service training?
So let me reframe the training model.
Okay.
And here's the thing. This is the second shop I've owned. I've hired coaches. I've hired my competitors in the coaching field. And one of the things that just drives me crazy is it's easy for a shop owner to outsource the training part of it. Let me get a coach to come in and train my person. The challenge with that is, does the training company, does the coach know your processes and know your culture? Do they understand what you want to train? And there's times where I will work with a client, and before we even begin training, I have got to understand, A, your business, you as an owner, what you want, what are your 5-year, 10-year, 15, 20-year goals, what are your lifetime goals? Tell me about every person on your team. We go through the DISC assessment on everybody before I start coaching with them, because before I want to start changing anything, I need to know where we're going.
Yeah.
What's the process? So number one, the shop owner is the best person to be able to guide that. Number two, if you could break this down into 15-minute coaching sessions a day, and then maybe back it up to a week, but it's daily coaching that is going to get them there. And then you can pepper in the quarterly or the monthly training outside of that. But you have to have a culture of, Tony Robbins calls it KANAI, constant, never-ending improvement. That has got to be part of the core, the recipe, the culture, the climate. I believe you referred to that in the past.
Yeah,
it's got to be there. And it comes from you. So here's the crazy thing. Everybody that comes to work with me knows that I'm a trainer. I train service advisors. The reason we have the shop is to harvest content out of the shop to bring to the world to train properly.
Yeah.
They know when I leave to go teach. I have not once had one of them ask to join me at one of my classes.
Why?
That's the person. That's them. I'm not going to ask you to go to class. I'll set up training for you. But I remember when I started. So go back to 1991. It's when I started working at my dad's gas station in Southern California. Every single class that was available, I paid for to go. He didn't pay for it. I did. Every time I'd come back from class, I'd set a new sales record and I'd make more money. And I just became this voracious consumer of education back in the 90s. And this thing that the person has to want to get better and want to train. There's so much content out there that it's available to everybody today for free. If you want to get better, you can in a short period of time. But it's interesting that I see it's just a matter of having to attract the right person that has a learning culture built within them.
I'm still stuck on they didn't want to go to classes with you. But why would they when you're the pro and I'm going to learn something from you every day? Why go to a class?
You want to get better.
See, because there's so much more to learn.
Well, there is. And getting out of the work environment, the reason I love to come into Vision or going to a class myself is when you can take the day-to-day pressures off, you don't have to worry about the cell phone. You don't have to worry about following up. You get to reset your mind and you actually expand because you think outside your normal box of where you're at and you're able to get new ideas in and then expand your thinking process, and networking as well is a huge thing.
Is part of your work to listen to calls?
It is. Yes.
You think it's good and important?
I listen to them as they happen.
Yeah, of course you do.
I'll hit the hold button and tell the service advisor, I don't do that.
But for client, for example, you have a client and you're going to listen to their calls. What value, what benefit does it bring to you as a coach and them as an SA?
It's twofold. The one side of it is their lowest level of competency. So we can have a script, okay, and I can write the script out perfect. And you can say it, but customers are savvy today. They're going to know if you feel it. So the thing I love about listening to the calls is you're going to know where your service advisor is at on their lowest level of competency. And then number two, you're going to have real world responses from customers that are mean, nasty, downright, I don't care what you want to do, I just need a price on this. It's amazing how impatient consumers are today, especially over the phone. So that's what I like, is also hearing the customer and their responses. And then you get to test your script and see what worked. I'm probably change it every week. We add a different word. We change a different phrase. We change things up because customers change along with it. So,
you know, and I love what you just said. Do you feel it? Mm-hmm. That's so powerful to have a service advisor smile before they answer, have the outline or the script. But if they don't feel it, it's going to come through.
It is, absolutely. What I've discovered is there's a certain level of technical knowledge they also have to have. So think about this. When consumers call a shop, they want the information they want fast. They want to be talking to a friendly person. And then they want to be talking to the local expert. And the challenge that I've seen a lot is we have experts in the back. I'm answering the phone. I don't need to know about cars. But if you don't know about cars and the customers know more about their car than you do, there's a disconnect immediately. And it's super hard to overcome that objection that's created by your lack of technical knowledge.
I love it. When a shop is looking to grow, is it the service advisor? Is it CarCount, ARO, deferred, CRM? When you're looking at all of these variables that can grow a top line, more important to have that service advisor at the top of their craft than all the other stuff you can do?
That's the obvious. I'm going to say yes to everything you just said.
You and I were talking before we turned the mics on about the life cycle of a shop too. And there's so many factors to weigh in as to how much weight we put on all those areas.
From my experience in the last 8 years, I can tell you when I can answer the phone, I know what I can get weekly. So if my goal is 30,000 a week in top line sales, if I'm on the drive 5 days a week, we're going to hit that number. That's how I've built myself, and I know I can create that. As soon as I turn the phones over to a new person, okay, they're going to answer the bulk of the incoming calls. You can see a 50% decrease in top line sales with an inexperienced person. And it's crazy. There could be one specific phone call that can kind of kickstart your week. And it's just absolutely crazy how that happens. So absolutely, I think the service advisor, they're the driver. They've got the foot on the accelerator pedal or the brake pedal on of the vehicle you're driving. So absolutely, whether it's one person or a process, the process has to be able to do it. And I'm really big, man, in the next 3 years, I want everything digital. We're almost there. We're about 40% where all of our leads are done digitally. We don't talk to the customer. It's booked online. They show up. They knew they had the appointment. Our communication systems handled.
And this is for a legacy customer.
Oh, no. First time customers too.
Even first time?
Yes.
They want a price though.
We've got systems for that. I've got menu pricing. I've got autoresponders that handle the inspection process. Why you need to inspect or diagnose the car first before we give you a price. Our level one testing is the most expensive in our area. And we do consistently 15 a week on new customers. And these are cars that are broken. They have other choices, but we built such value in solving these problems. And then you back that up with our reputation that customers come in and pay our price on it.
You got to be so proud of that reputation you have after 8 years.
It's nuts. For me, proud is more ego driven. And I've learned. Now,
I don't know why. I could argue with that. You don't have to have an ego to be proud. You just look back at all the hard work you've done and none of it has anything to do with ego. It's because you had a purpose.
It is interesting. I'll share a quick story. So I had one of the longest phone calls from a really mad customer the other day. It was 13 minutes and 7 seconds.
Don't you love this guy, huh? The stats that come out of him.
So
1307.
The phone rings, caller ID, and I go, I am not going to pick it up. I do not want to talk to that customer. So being the person I am, I bite the bullet and I answer the phone. And we have some of these cars that we work on that have these perpetual issues. And this is one of these darn cars we just haven't been able to figure out. So she calls up and she said, my car's broken again. You've ripped me off and you must buy your reputation. You must buy all your reviews. You're not going to have a 5-star review anymore. I'm going to sue you. And every time I'd come back and ask, start talking, she would yell at me again. And it was literally 7 minutes and 15 seconds before I was able to talk. And the 5 minute mark, I said her name three times and I slammed the phone down on the desk five times to try to grab her attention to break her pattern out of this rut. So long story short, it's when you talk about being proud about your reputation, I will fiercely defend my reputation. You will not slander us. You will not say we rip you off. You will not say we are fraudsters, any of that. And in doing that, I'm protecting the reputation of our industry. I think it's too easy for consumers to slander shops. It's too easy for consumers to push the responsibility of properly fixing a vehicle off to a repair shop or a dealership and talk bad about them when it was the way that the consumer maintained their or lack of maintaining their car and wanting to control the repair process that created the problem that they have, but they want to put it on us. And so I simply, about the 12 minute mark, I said, okay, I'm going to help you get this fixed, but here's what we both have to agree with. Number one, we still haven't found the root of your problem. There's something that's causing the result of what you're having every 9 months. So I'm going to need your car and I may need it for 2 months. So we got to figure out alternate transportation to you. I just need time to get this solved. The other thing too is when you come in, you've got to let me talk. So you can't just yell at me for 7 minutes before we have a conversation. So it's just, yes, I'm proud of the reputation, but I will fiercely defend it. And at the same time, it's something that consumers have to take ownership of as well. It's not necessarily the shop's fault.
You said something huge just a minute ago, control the repair process. How many customers do you have that like to do that?
That's every single customer today.
But there's so many that just want to drop the keys and make it right.
Well, that's after you've trained them.
I see. Okay. That's the point I was going for.
Yes. So I just recently to that point, I had to fire another technician. I think we're on technician 53.
Oh, perfect. Thank God. I was wondering what the number was.
But it was one of my first customers and they have a family. Now their kids are driving like mine are. So it's interesting to go through these life cycles with your customers, right? So my teenager comes in, he starts to drive. So this was a car that my customer Brandy had driven and raised the smaller kids in. And then she got a Honda Odyssey van and now they saved this car for their son. So they bring it in, they've got a concern with this, this, and this. So long story short, technician failed to miss the root of what it came, which was a very easy diagnosis. Just try to sell brakes, miss the control arms. Super easy to fix. And then when my advisor called Brandy, she goes, John told me he knows how Jeremy fixes cars. So whatever needs to be done, do it because it's cheaper to do it now than to piece it together. So I've done my job as a shop owner. This is our culture. I know how to fix cars probably better than most people in the United States. I can take your repair side of it and your maintenance dollars. And if you give me your car for 5 years, I will save you money. I guarantee you that. I will give you a better asset in the end. I will make sure your car doesn't break down. I will make sure we do the right things at the right time and at the absolute lowest possible price we possibly can to give you value, Mr. Customer, but you've got to follow my process. So it's all about working in the system and all that. So the reason I fired him is I got in the car and I drove and I heard a clunk right away and it was a control arm bushings. He totally missed it. And then the next day, I fired myself because I didn't even look at the struts and the front struts were original. We missed that part of it. So when you talk about adding top line sales, everything comes together. These customers will spend the money if we do our job right. But if we're in a transaction relationship with them versus a relationship with them, and we're trying to sell components and we're trying to sell fluff services and things that really don't matter, we're off base.
In and out transactions. Mm-hmm. Just do what the customer wants.
Right.
I just know too many shops today that have not signed up. And they're doing well, but they could be doing better. Way better.
A lot of that success is a product of the market.
Really?
Oh, yeah. You got to look at them. Come on. The industry has created the best market we've ever had in the entire history of automobiles.
But are you talking about the market locally? I mean, are you talking about the big box stores they're competing with and they're afraid?
I'm talking about the world in general.
The world in general.
Okay. So we're 2 years post-COVID, right?
Yeah.
So we go up into COVID and we were on an upswing. Okay. 2008, we came out of the worst recession ever.
Yeah.
And I remember that. I had my shop in 05 and 07 up in Flagstaff. The economy shut off. Like there was no money anywhere. So then we come out of that and ramp up into 2020. Things are still doing good. COVID hits. There's free money everywhere.
Yeah.
Our shop took off. You couldn't get into our shop for a month. And most shops out of that COVID experience, there was repairs everywhere. People want to fix their car. So now when you look at what's going on in the automotive industry overall with EV, and hybrid vehicles in California saying they're going to outlaw internal combustion engines in 2035, it's created this perfect storm. So manufacturers have removed maintenance. These cars are not designed to last long term. So for the first 100,000 miles of driving, the car's neglected. Then we get in the aftermarket after 100,000. It needs a lot of repairs. So it's created this perfect storm of repairs. So in the last 4 years, customers have had money. But now I got news for you. It's time to pay the piper.
COVID's over, baby.
It is.
It's a new world.
The free money's gone.
That's what you're saying about the new market.
Yes.
It's the market. Ah, okay. I get what you're saying.
Yes.
But still, if your solid processes are good, great people, good marketing, the marketplace should be your oyster.
Oh, absolutely. And I agree. I think you can go into most small communities throughout the United States. And if you just smile, are friendly, have a competent technician, use a little bit of a digital sales process, you'll dominate the auto repair side of it.
I went to a Disney Institute a while back, maybe it's 10 years ago. It was a public company that I was working for. And it was so fascinating to go into these different workshops with Disney leaders coming in and guiding us, stick ups on the wall. I can't remember, it was a strategic plan thing we were working on. But when they made the big announcement to us, let us tell you what every person who works for Disney is required to do. Look them in the eye and smile. Clients, or what do they call them who goes to Disney?
The guests.
The guests. Each other, peer-to-peer, showman, leadership, look them in the eye and smile. And man, that you just nailed it. Truly just nailed it. In the elevator here, how critical all that stuff is. Meeting people, networking. Man,
absolutely.
The biggest benefit people say when you go to Vision, not only is the training, but on top of that is the networking piece, if you let it happen.
Absolutely.
So what are we going to talk about Saturday morning? This communication piece, this 360. I just love the people who are going to be on our panel. I've seen everyone's talking points. I think we're going to rock the audience. What do you plan to hope happens?
Matt Fanzel is going to be on stage, so who knows what's going to happen, but it'll be a lot of fun.
I actually talked to him about that. I says, will you behave?
I'm sure he wrote you a letter with 5,000 words of why he won't. And why
no,
he
didn't. Let's break the code. He didn't give us any talking points.
Of course not.
And I know Matt well enough that I know how he's going to fit in.
Absolutely. It's interesting. I'll go back on communication. This is probably 10, 15 years ago. And Dan Rather was interviewing Simon Cowell. And he said, hey, what's the one thing you're going to teach your young son? And Simon told him, I'm going to teach him how to talk. And Dan goes, come on. That's like every kid learns how to talk, right? He goes, no, like verbal communication is going to be a dying art in the future. Absolutely.
I'm pointing over. Tracy, could you get that for me? Toastmasters. Jeremy, we have a remarkable results radio Toastmasters, virtual Toastmasters.
I'm going to have to join that.
And it's coming up to about a year. remarkableresults.biz/Toastmasters. You can come on as a guest and then, of course, join if you want to. It's twice a month. We meet virtually. One afternoon, 1, 7 p.m. Eastern. And I've got to tell you, I do this for a living. And it taught me so much. It's been an incredible ride. And we're just so thankful for Craig, Sarah Frazier, Tracy, myself, Chris Clodier, that really built and put this thing together. And it has really, we've got a lot of service advisors on it.
Awesome.
We just encourage them because I think and I feel deep in my heart that the discipline you get from the Toastmasters hourly meeting puts you in a completely different zone when it comes to talking and opening your mouth and what you're going to say and how you're going to say it.
Absolutely. Well, save a seat for number 68 for me.
Maybe we can save her or him. What else? Anything else before we go? It's been a while since we've been on.
Right now, I turned 51 this year.
Stop it.
Yeah.
Look good, man.
Well, thank you. It's all like California sunshine.
Yeah.
Just my message, really what I'm focused on right now is transitioning, go through these milestones in life, and getting beyond 50 kind of really puts life into perspective. And not only do we need to make our businesses better, but the legacy you're going to leave. And I've got a 15-year run that I'm going to go super hard for. We'll see. I might do chapter 2 for another 15 years after that. And then maybe chapter 3 after that. But time is short. I look back to why did I go buy the shop and what the last 8 years have held for me. Hold those that are super close to you that are really important. And remember the hard work and all the negativity we deal with internally with what we do, the struggle. It's for them. And you've got to capture those magic moments with your loved ones and your friends and your family. And we've got some magic moments coming up here in the next couple of days at Vision. And that's why we do what we do. And help your community out, but build your legacy. Make it good.
That was very powerful. No matter what age you are and you're listening to this show, and you know we do some really up close and personal things. That was very, very powerful. Thank you. No matter what your age, hold your loved ones close and have a plan and a vision. And it's cool to hear you say for another 15, but by the time you get to 60, that'll become...
What, 60 is the new 20?
No, 60 is the new 40.
Right.
And 70 is the new 50. And
I don't want to work
that long. And 80 is the new 65. You don't want to work that long or that hard?
No, I'll have my racing teams. So I'll be doing some Chip Ganassi stuff and just guiding, directing race cars around the
track. Great to catch up with you. Thanks for being on, man.
Thanks, man.
Okay.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from the premier automotive aftermarket podcast. Until next time.